From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of October 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Dan Zwicker is out of the office this afternoon. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And we'll hear all about USDA's organic survey, the organic survey that was taken in 2019, and what that means in the state of Illinois and across the nation. Mark Schleusner will be here from the state statistician's office in Illinois on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn futures for the day finished up 2.5 cents at $4.16 and a quarter. The March at $4.18 and a quarter, 1.5 higher. And May contract at $4.19 and three quarters, up 1 and a quarter. July corn, $4.19 and a quarter, up 1 and a quarter. And December of next year at $3.96 and a half, down 3 cents on this Thursday afternoon. November soybeans at $10.73 and three quarters, a penny and 3 quarters higher. The January up 3 quarters at $10.72 and a quarter. And March corn at $10.58 and three quarters, unchanged. May futures unchanged, $10.55 the settlement price. And November beans of next year, $9.82 and a half, unchanged. Bean oil futures up 49 cents at $33.69. The bean meal at $3.82.40, up 3.60 for the day. Wheat futures in the soft red December down 7 at $6.22 and three quarters. The July harvest month 8 lower at $6.13, and hard red at $5.77 and three quarters in the July. 8.5 cents lower. Live cattle futures, October, up down 32.5 at $103.32 and a half. Feeder cattle in the November, 72.5 cents lower at $130.42 and a half. And December lean hogs at $66.20, down the $3 limit for the afternoon. Crude oil up 67 cents a barrel. Ethanol about unchanged. Heating oil 2 2/10 higher. That's diesel fuel and gasoline on the RBOB, a penny and 9 tenths higher for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up around 162 points. And gold futures down $25.20 for the day. The U.S. dollar, by the way, up 0.331 at 92.3. We're now joined by Matt Bennett at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, tell me a little bit about how things are finishing up there on the farm, and then we'll get to today's marketplace.
Yeah, you know, we were very fortunate and finished up last Friday, actually, ahead of schedule. Didn't think we'd get done maybe quite that quickly, but we were able to. We didn't have any replant beans like we usually do that we have to go back and get. We've got our river bottom beans cut. So, you know, we're very fortunate to get done there. And then, heck, I've had 3 inches of rain this week. So, but as dry as what it was, I will say that several of the guys we do business with and several of the guys in my area, you know, they're actually picking corn already here this afternoon. And it's just a testament to the fact that we were extremely dry, and now we're turning around and you know, getting some moisture in the ground finally again.
What'd you think of the marketplace today?
Well, you know, the markets definitely, you still got, you know, in my opinion, a reluctance to see any sort of downward movement. So you went in the overnight market, and it looked to me like we were going to get a little bit of a correction, you know, and then we came back in and the funds bought some of this. And, you know, I mean, you come in here this morning, you see some really good export sales on soybeans again. I mean, this demand train is just not slowing down whatsoever.
Why do you think that's the case?
Oh, I think there's a lot of things that are going on. You know, I think that the trade is sitting here looking at the fact that the U.S. is probably going to be, you know, the basic place that you're going to have to go to get soybeans purchased. I mean, nice thing is you saw some beans going to Mexico this morning. I mean, not everything's going to China, but we know that the U.S. is most likely going to be the preferred destination, at least until, you know, mid-February, maybe late February. You know, so if the Chinese continue to purchase like they are, as well as the rest of the world, the only place really to go to really get soybeans is going to be us. I mean, you look at Brazil, they basically sold too many soybeans early on, and now, you know, they're lifting any sort of the restrictions, the tariffs, to where they can actually go in and buy U.S. beans if they need to. So if they buy U.S. beans and U.S. corn, there's no question about it in my mind that you're going to see a continued support for this market that people definitely did not expect, you know, just a few weeks ago.
Does this change the way you think about marketing corn? I don't know that it does anything for soybeans. You can tell me that too. But corn in particular, because it's already maybe in the bin, or at least some of it is. And I'm just wondering what you think producers should do.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way I look at it, the same way I've been looking at it for some time, I want to keep ownership of corn. I've felt like that for quite a while. But, you know, at the same time, I like to take some risk off the table. So, you know, if I'm delivering to the elevator, I want to sell the physical corn, you know, maybe spend anywhere from 12 to 20 cents on call option play, something that is limited in risk, but it gives me the opportunity to participate, you know, hopefully in 80, 90 cents at least of a rally. I think there's some really good opportunities out there. I probably would prefer going out to the July to do something like that. But, you know, if it's in the bin, and you're trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do with this? I definitely want to have regular communication with the person or the people that I might be selling to, find out what they're willing to do, because I'm hearing pretty good pushes, not only for corn right now, but, you know, if you go out to March, May, you name it. I want to have a good conversation there. And if they do want it bad enough, go ahead and get some of that contracted out. And if that's the case, then I want to keep ownership if possible. I think that the corn market isn't necessarily going to go to the moon. But at the same time, I feel like the rally is not quite done. I think this November report is going to be a friendly one. And I've got to think that due to some of the revisions they're going to have to make in demand moving forward, you could see a carryout significantly lower than even what the trade's looking at right now.
You mentioned a couple of things I want to double check as facts. So 80 to 90 cents potential rally, roughly speaking. You're buying that on time, but I don't know how much time. So when you try to buy that risk, how much value on time, or where are you putting those calls?
Right. So, like right now, a pretty fashionable play is a 420, 520 July call spread. And I think those were booking today in the 20, 22 cent range. And so, you know, I think that those make a heck of a lot of sense. I think that there's some real functionality there. I know some people might want to offset some of the costs and maybe sell a put below the market. I'm okay with that as long as they understand that the market reverses and heads sharply lower. They may take a little bit of risk, but bottom line is that gets you all the way out to, you know, June 25th time frame. You know, if you're paying 20 cents, for instance, that gives you a chance to make 80 cents out of that dollar call spread.
I got a different sort of question for you, because I've been talking a lot about wheat on the radio, specifically with the meteorologists. They have been worried about the hard red winter wheat in the United States, in the plain states. Russia has, and the Black Sea has had a problem. They had a problem last year. They're still having a problem at this time. And even some of those areas in the southern hemisphere have had some difficult times with wheat. Are you hearing at all that producers anywhere in the Corn Belt are considering winter wheat more heavily this year than they have in the past?
You know, we've actually heard that some. Of course, when you get south of us, I think that especially in that soft red market, there's a lot of folks that have made a ton of money with the wheat soybean rotation here in the last several years. And so, you know, I've heard from a lot of folks that they were really excited to get some of this moisture because they were afraid they might not be able to get their wheat, you know, to germinate. I mean, obviously Brazil was trying to get their first crop soybeans up. So, you know, the interesting thing, I mean, we were looking the other day just for fun, and I mean, people are paying money for $8 and $9 July bean call or wheat calls out the next summer. There are people out there that feel this wheat market could absolutely take off and explode. And I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying that there's people out there that think that it can. Now, as a producer, if I'm going to go heavy on wheat, I like, again, managing some of my risk whenever I can sell, you know, well over $6 wheat, you know, at least basis the board out to the delivery time frame of July 21. I think it makes a heck of a lot of sense. And I think it's something that producers should at least you know, be making some scale up sales as this market rallies, because there's no guarantee that it's going to rally like some people think it will.
Are you fearful of anything at this time?
Oh, I'm fearful of people getting too bullish during a rally. You know, I think that sometimes you got to be careful to do that. Am I bearish right now? No. I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited about what we see going on. But at the same time, you know, sometimes you got to take that bird in your hand. And I think that's where making some sales, taking risk off the table as you rally, it makes a heck of a lot more sense than letting it all ride. Now, again, I'm not bearish, but at the same time, we don't know what's around the corner tomorrow. We do have an election coming up. We all know that we could see extreme volatility in any of the marketplaces around that election. So, you know, I think that as a producer, at least quantifying what my net income is going to look like on the worst case scenario probably makes a heck of a lot more sense than to let it all go.
Does COVID-19 and gasoline usage, ethanol usage by default cause a problem in the future?
You know, if we start shutdowns again, you know, I think that it certainly is something to be fearful of. At the same time, I think based upon just the general theme of what people feel like here in the country, I guess I got to think people aren't going to shut down maybe as intensely as what they did previously. I think just knowing more about what's going on, knowing more about mortality rates, you know, any deaths are too much. We all know that. But, you know, knowing that actually mortality rates aren't near as bad as what initially was maybe thought, I've got to think that you're not going to see the complete pullback in people getting out and doing things. Now, are we going to fly? Yeah, maybe not. But, you know, I do think people are still going to want to get out and about. And I think from a mental health perspective, I think everyone realized that that's probably something that they didn't need to shut down whole hog. I think living our lives, but doing so in a smart way is probably something people are going to lean towards, maybe more so than just completely shutting down.
So live and learn, and mitigation is the deal this time around as opposed to shutting down.
I think that that's what you're going to see. I'm not trying to make any sort of statements. I just think that moving forward, that's probably what you're going to see is maybe people a little more cautiously optimistic about the way things are going to turn out than maybe the all-out fear that we saw before.
Hey, thank you so much, and we appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Hey, don't forget to visit our website, willag.org, willag.org. Now, I know day in and day out, you've been doing the same thing for a long time, getting up, shucking corn, combining soybeans. And it seems like you've been at it for a while and you've not had a break. Some rainfall might give you that opportunity. However, you need a break each and every day for your safety and that of those around you. So why not just, you know, take some time, shut the combine down right now and take a 20-minute nap. That's right, shut it down. Take a 20-minute nap because it's worthwhile. That'll keep you fresh the rest of the day, all the way through. It is clearly the one thing the farm safety people say you should do. Well, that and try to get 8 hours of sleep each and every night. The other thing, since Matt and I have talked about it, and I've been saying this for a month now on the air, make sure you do some COVID-19 mitigation. And by that, I mean, just put on a mask when you're around people you're not normally around, the people that don't live in your house, and that'll help out tremendously. Many people who are sick with COVID are down for about 3 weeks and then they recover, but they're really tired in the process, and it's just simply something you cannot afford during the harvest season. USDA today released a survey of organic agriculture in the United States. It shows that last year, there were about 5.5 million certified organic acres in the U.S. Of those, 3.5 million were used as cropland, and just under 2 million were used as pasture or range. Of the 3.5 million crop acres, 2.2 million were dedicated to field crops and hay in 2019. The total value was about $1.2 billion, or about $550 an acre. Organic corn for grain or seed, by the way, grossed an average of $870 an acre, of which there were only 320,000 nationwide. Now, here's statistician Mark Schleusner with some of the numbers from the state of Illinois.
For Illinois, in 2019, there were 258 certified organic farms operating more than 60,000 acres of certified organic land, including pasture and cropland. These 258 farms generated more than $72 million in organic sales compared to $60 million in 2017. That's an increase of 20%. Crop sales, including nursery and greenhouse, accounted for $53 million in sales, while livestock and livestock products like eggs and milk represented $19 million or 26% of the total. A further breakdown of the total organic sales in Illinois shows $37 million in field crop sales, or more than half of the grand total. Organic vegetable sales totaled $7 million, organic milk sales were $2.3 million, and organic egg sales were $13.6 million. At the U.S. level, more than 16,000 organic farms operated 5.5 million acres of certified organic land and produced $9.9 billion of certified organic sales in 2019. California led the way with $3.6 billion in organic sales. I would like to thank all of the producers that responded to the organic survey. Your individual survey responses are confidential by law, but the state and national totals are important to the agricultural community. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
On this Thursday, Mike Tenora joins us as usual to take a look at the weather forecast. Mike, it's hot. It's muggy here. All kinds of sunshine. What are things like in Chicago?
Well, it's not like that. It's pretty cool and it's cloudy. We've had temperatures in the 40s and 50s today. We had a lot of heavy thunderstorms last night. So there's a very sharp divide across the state with southern areas looking real nice and the far northern areas still on the other side of that boundary.
I take it that's the gradient is something we'll be talking about for some time to come, and that those who are to the northwest are going to stay cold and maybe wet and, well, snow or rain or something. What can you tell me?
Well, this is a very unusual pattern. I don't recall seeing something quite like this. But what's happening is we have Arctic air in place across the Dakotas, and that's going to leave South Dakota, North Dakota, and Montana below freezing all the way until sometime on Tuesday. So we're talking about 120 hours or so of below freezing temperatures in the Dakotas in October. And we'll even see temperatures all the way into the single digits at times. So it's very much like winter in that region. And wheat is still emerging there too. So it's something we'll be keeping an eye on. That air mass is going to crash southward early next week. And it will send the entire hard red winter wheat belt below freezing for about 36 to 48 hours starting on Sunday. We might even see high temperatures only in the mid-20s in parts of Kansas, Colorado, and Nebraska, which in October is extremely unusual. In fact, minimum temperatures will fall into the single digits and teens, and that will put parts of Colorado, Nebraska, and Kansas at levels that are records for the entire month of October because it's just so unusual to see it this cold at this time of the year. And we'll see some snow along with that. But the big question comes up on Tuesday and Wednesday next week. A system is finally going to move across the plains, and we need to see some big rains and snows or something before we go into the winter because it's so dry out there. It looks like we are going to see a fairly decent event come Tuesday and Wednesday, and that will affect parts of Oklahoma, Texas, and maybe even Kansas. So look for about a half of an inch to 1 inch of water the way we think it's going to shape up at the moment.
What will farmers here in our part of the world be dealing with as they try to finish up corn harvest?
We're going to see some decent rains. It'll rain on and off, kind of like it has been for a while. And that will all start to clear out once we get beyond that system in the middle of next week. But basically quite a bit wetter than what it has been over most of the autumn. And then it starts to, again, dry out once we get beyond the middle of next week.
In South America, they have been desperately waiting for rainfall to get started on the planting season there. And they're now, better than a month behind, I think, in parts of Brazil. What are conditions looking like today?
Well, it's still not raining that much. We've only had isolated to scattered storms over the last several days. If we look at our proprietary data, we're showing that about 80% of the soybean crop in Brazil received less than half of its normal rainfall over the last 30 days. And that compares to about 40% a year ago. And keep in mind that last year was considered a dry start to the season too. And then comparing that to 10% 2 years ago, which was a little bit of a wetter season. But basically we're still sky high in the coverage of dryness in Brazil. It is going to rain a little bit as we move forward. We'll see a thunderstorm cluster move through on Sunday and Monday. That will moisten things up a little bit. Then once we get beyond Sunday and Monday, will finally see the wet season start in the central and northern areas. So they'll see a lot of rain coming up later next week and then probably into November in those northern areas where they've had difficulties planting. Those southern areas, though, even though they should get 1 to 2 inches early next week, they're probably not going to see very much after that. And the reason we're concerned about it is because normally they'd receive around 3 to 3.5 inches of rain every 2 weeks. So they're already in a drought, and now we're looking at 1 to 2 inches of rain, which is helpful, yes, but if there's no rain behind it, that's another 2 week period with only half of its normal rainfall or even less. So this is something that we need to keep on watching. In Argentina, they've seen some rains this week, and there is a pretty decent event coming up on Sunday as that same system is driving thunderstorms in Brazil also sweeps across Argentina. So the story in Argentina is going to stabilize because we saw some rains. We do have some decent rains coming up, and their climate is a little bit drier at this time of the year than in Brazil. But we're also looking at a dry period coming up once the system moves through. So the big question that we're wondering, we don't have the answer, unfortunately, is whether or not this rain system that's moving through is part of the start to the end of a drought in Argentina, southern Brazil, and Paraguay, or if it's just a rain system within a drought. We won't really know the answer to that until sometime next month or maybe December. But basically the point is that, yes, there's some rain coming up, but we would argue that you're going to need to see more than this.
Speaking of drought, the wheat-growing regions in the Black Sea area, Russia, Ukraine, I think you mentioned Turkey to me at some point, are really still in dire need. Are you very worried about that?
Well, I think it's a major problem. I think it's one of the biggest problems we've seen out there in quite a long time, probably going back to the drought that we had maybe 10 years ago. The problem is that even though we did see rain this week and about half of the crop received what you would consider decent rainfall for a 7 to 10 day period, it did nothing to alleviate the drought. If you look at the coverage of dryness on the wheat crop in Russia over the last 30 days or the last 60 days or the last 90 days, we only see about 2% of the entire wheat crop having been wetter than normal in any of those periods, even after we account for the rain that just fell earlier in the week. And that just tells you that it's been very dry and that we need more rain. There's no real rain on the horizon. We can see that all the way out 10 to 14 days, we just don't have very much, if anything, on the way. So that crop is going to go through one of its driest periods on record. In fact, the USDA just a week ago stated that based on their records, this is the driest period they've ever seen between early August and the middle of October in over 30 years of record. And we certainly think that that situation still exists today based on the data that we have. So that'll be something to be seen as we go forward and what that means for how much they planted. But this is still a story, and it's probably going to linger once we get into the winter.
Hey, Mike, thank you. We appreciate it.
Sounds great, Todd. I'll talk with you next week.
Indeed we will. That's Mike Tenori. He's at T-Storm Weather. He's in Chicago, Illinois, and helped us to wrap up this edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media.